Pick up on Susan's point. I'm Scott Thomas. I am at Claremont Graduate University. I'm the Dean of the School of Educational Studies. I am also a sociologist. Susan asked me if I was going to declare, come out as a sociologist, and we were joking about that because there's a prestige hierarchy that we're walking around here, too. It's unacknowledged in our conversations about liberal studies and education, and there's a distinct prestige hierarchy operating across these fields and disciplines that we're not acknowledging. And I'm a mathematical sociologist, though, which means I understand math, so I'm a little more prestigious than, say, a cultural anthropologist or something like that. It's kind of funny, but there's some truth to it. So I'm proud to be a sociologist, but frankly, it's an inferior identity among my academic colleagues. I've heard so much was talking about engineering being, controlling things. Liberal arts was the biggest college, but engineering still controlled things. Well, let's ask ourselves why that is. There are resources, there's prestige that go along with those resources. These things define our environmental context on the college campus. So there's an implied and at times explicit prestige hierarchy operating. One more personal example, my son, a sophomore at Claremont Colleges, he wanted to be a sociologist just like dad, despite my efforts to disabuse him of such ambitions. He also found that there were things that he could maximize his identity academically and intellectually as an undergraduate. And so he is a sociologist at Pitzer College, which is kind of the loosey, hippie-ish, kind of progressive thinking the social sciences group in the Claremont Colleges. And he's a computer science and math major at Harvey Mudd. And his identity, however, as much as he loves the sociology in Pitzer, is that math and computer science major at Mudd. And this is what he carries around as part of his identity because it elevates his prestige within his group of peers within the Claremont Colleges, and we see this time and time again. I study these things, and I could go on about them, but that's not why I was asked to be here. But let me start there. After Susan's comments, I'm simply going to accept the presumed virtues of the integrative objective of liberal studies in engineering. I think, Susan, embedded within your comments, there was a question about the value of that. My own thinking here is going to focus less on what can be done in a program on a campus or within a consortium, and more on what can be done at a macro level to integrate these two bodies into a coherent field of thought and knowledge that could be seen as intellectually and academically transformative. I believe that this is a primary objective embedded within our goal here. So allow me to begin with a premise that will allow me to address the practical. Always dangerous to throw a premise out because at the beginning because everybody will attack the premise and you won't pay any attention to what I have to say afterward, but here we go. In any academic field, incentives and rewards at the level of undergraduate teaching will be inadequate in general to overcome the field of cultural forces at work within the superordinate discipline. So what I'm saying is that our disciplinary identities matter more than our localities in terms of where we're employed, the departments we operate in, the universities that we work at. And this is a tension that we're going to have to overcome. Now, over time, as we morphed from what were effectively liberal arts institutions to research institutions in the latter part of the 19th century, our fields became increasingly specialized, and the idea of a professional field has emerged writ large. And this is what we're talking about, this evolution towards greater specialization and socialization towards those specializations that are superordinate to what goes on campuses. Now, as with any discipline, there are broader field-level norms and expectations embedded within not our undergraduate programs, what I'm going to talk about here, but our graduate programs. And these graduate programs train and socialize the faculty who control, through definition and delivery, the undergraduate engineering curriculum. These field-level norms, the discipline-level norms, typically transcend institutional norms as the academic success of faculty is defined more by the allegiance to durable expectations of the discipline than it is to the operationally variant expectations of the institution in which one is employed. There is, of course, variance in the degree to which this assertion holds. Liberal arts colleges, Brian, I like the potluck metaphor. I work at a very small university. It's a research university. It's a transdisciplinary university. That's what we've been calling ourselves for the last decade or so. That transdisciplinarity is as much utilitarian as it is utopian. You know, we're small, so we've got to play a lot of different positions at the university. And this is very different than working at MIT or Berkeley or let's name a large research university. There's some necessity in the collaborative arrangements that exist at CGU. Now, to the degree that my premise is valid, until the discipline itself, whether it's liberal arts disciplines or engineering as a field, until the discipline values such integration as part of its core identity, incenting faculty to behave differently in some ways that are actually at odds with core definitions of success in those fields, this will remain highly problematic. We've heard some good ideas about structures, about incenting faculty, about creating different units that can hold interdisciplinary work and these types of things, but these structural features on campuses are running up against these broader cultural forces of the disciplines that we're not addressing directly. So in short, I would argue that the institutional reward structure for the promotion of such integration between liberal studies and engineering may not be sufficient to overcome threats to academic success as traditionally defined. So this is in many ways the same problem associated with purchase on any interdisciplinary ambition. In the absence of meaningfully addressing this tension, those participating in these efforts will tend to be either senior tenured faculty or those with ambitions on the margins of the narrow definition of success as measured within the field itself. If the goal is a transformation of the architecture of the undergraduate engineering curriculum, the undergraduate curriculum generally, we would greatly be assisted by the firm enlistment of the vibrant center of the distribution of faculty, the vibrant center that are left out because oftentimes they're pursuing higher order objectives to advance their careers. All this said, I'm very heartened by the diversity of the disciplinary background in our gathering, and I applaud that. But a real integrative transformation would seem to require an alteration of the socialization of emerging faculty in ways that are consonant with an evolving faculty and academic reward structure. In simple terms, until things change in the content and processes defining our graduate programs, we should not expect significant integrative change on scale at the undergraduate level. Aside from a practical organizational analysis, there's also a deeper epistemological tension that I think we need to address. This is a tension between the liberal arts and engineering that I believe would benefit from closer interrogation. From a critical perspective, Susan, can I say you were speaking from a critical perspective?
Yes.
Thank you. Make that clear. From a critical perspective, professional fields of study are frequently argued, rightly or wrongly, to favor capitalistic aims over humanistic aims. The liberal arts hew toward the opposite, or so the critical argument goes, at least in terms of modern and postmodern thought. Now, I know we can mount specific counterarguments to the case of engineering, but the terrain still remains contested, and I think that that's an important context that we need to acknowledge. Loosely articulated, though, this context is simultaneously the inherent challenge in the integrative objective as well as its imperative, and I look forward to the discussions ahead. Thank you.